Everyone, this is Rob. Just a few small production notes to let everyone know that today's episode, episode 71, is actually the final episode that Tom is on as a co-host. Unfortunately, due to personal reasons, he had to step down after this episode. I want to thank Tom and his wife, Marcella, for all of the help that they gave on the show. If it wasn't for them, this probably would never have gotten off the ground. So thank you both for the time and effort that you put in. But do not fret. We still have another 102 episodes, and I will be the sole host for the rest of them. So, hope you'll continue to listen, and hope everything's great. Tally-ho!
Hello, and welcome to episode 71 of The Great Escape, the daily podcast where you dig the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Tom.
And I'm Rob.
And joining us today from Star Wars Minute is the one, the only Alex Robinson. How are you doing today, Alex?
Hello there. Happy to be here.
We're incredibly happy to have you. Minute 71, it begins with Roger saying, well, thanks, Hiltz. And it ends with Werner saying, thank you, Herr Hendley. So we just get the last few frames of Roger bringing Hiltz more into the fold from last week. But then we get more scenes inside Hendley and Collins' room, which seems like most of, maybe not most, but an awful lot of the important plot things happen in and about this room. And we get the continuation of, you know, the previous arc where Hendley stole Werner's wallet. And, well, I guess we should start. Hendley and Colin are playing chess. And it really appears that Colin is getting his butt kicked in chess. I am no means a chess grandmaster, but sure looks like Colin is struggling, and I don't know if that's because Colin's eyesight is going and he's trying to stare at the board and figure it out. He's irritated that Henley's beat him 4 or 5 times in a row here now.
4 or 5? I mean, come on, they've been there for weeks already. He's probably beaten them every single day.
Well, just tonight. I was just talking about tonight's games.
But I think we should back up slightly because the minute does start with the tag end of last week's scene where you have Roger and Mac finishing their conversation with Hiltz. It's only for a few seconds at the beginning of this minute, but you can see that Roger and Mac give a look to one another, knowing that they've accomplished what they were trying to accomplish. You know, last week we discussed the whole thing about them trying to bounce into doing something, and you know, they found a way to really push him to the point where he wasn't only willing to do it, he was more than willing to do it. He was up for the challenge. So the beginning of this minute just gives us that look between the two of them where they're like, okay, mission accomplished. We can now, you know, we can now continue with the regular plan and find a way for us to get the information as to what's going on immediately outside of the camp in order to plan ahead as to when we're going to be doing this breakout. I know it was just a very small part of it, of this minute, but I thought it was very significant.
It also gives me a chance to discuss Attenborough and McQueen, because other than that, we only have the other three guys, and so I get a little tiny little snippet of them that I can talk about in my minute. So, I don't really have a huge amount to say about them, but I recognize Attenborough. The only thing I know him from, probably, I guess these days, probably everyone knows him from Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park, yep.
Yeah, so
it looks a little different.
Yeah, a little bit different. But I like that certain actors, you know, they can have a whole, it's, you know, dealing with Star Wars as I do, there's plenty of actors who have had, like, long careers, like Peter Cushing, who now is, you know, pretty much remembered from Star Wars. You know, there's a couple of hardcore horror fans out there who remember him from the Hammer films, but, like, for the rest of eternity, he'll be known as Grand Moff Tarkin. And then Attenborough will be known.
Guinness is the same thing. Alex Guinness.
Totally. Yeah. Alex Guinness. So I think Attenborough, it's nice to see him in a different thing other than just being the mastermind of a dinosaur park.
He's in Mastermind here, too.
Yeah, this is probably... Does it work to have him be the same character? Or I guess we don't know his fate. I don't know anything because I haven't seen the rest of the movie yet. I'm only watching it a minute at a time, so I don't know what happens to him. But
wait, you seriously haven't seen this movie?
No, I have. I was just kidding.
Oh, okay. It's possible. Yeah. You know, I know that people do have guests that only watch it. It happens.
Yeah. Just in my head, I always like trying to imagine an actor's playing the same character for their whole lives and just trying to figure out ways that we can say, oh, look, it's the same guy. You know, he returned to America and started a dinosaur farm.
But, right. But, I mean, you could also look at it from the perspective, you know, in Crichton's original book, spoiler alert, Attenborough's character dies.
Yeah. Right.
So you can always have reincarnations. I guess you can say it's a multiverse.
Yeah. Yeah. An unreliable narrator. He didn't really die, but the author just said, okay, you know what? This is what happened.
Correct. Yes. But you ask a very interesting question. Could it be the same person?
No.
You know what? I can actually see it. I can, because here you have someone who, I mean, we've discussed this in the past. You know, when you listen to the other minutes, or when you, I'm assuming you've already listened to them up until now, right? Mm-hmm. So we've discussed the fact that Roger is shown as a character who is quick on his feet. You know, he's brought to the camp. He's there just a few hours. He's already got a plan. You know, he already knows what he's doing, and he's already got everything set up and stuff like that. So when it comes to being able to put together a plan and think of a great idea and find a way to actually present that idea, I would say that there is a possibility that you could say that the characters have similarity to them, and that maybe in some universe they, you know, Roger makes it out of this and ends up, you know, becoming a multimillionaire.
Now, here's what I'm going to propose, because we know what happens to Roger at the end of the movie. Richard Attenborough.
Well, we don't know because spoiler, we don't see him get shot.
That's true. I'm going to go with it's Richard Attenborough. Well, it's Roger's Twitter who, after the events of this movie, has decided I'm going to create dinosaurs and unleash them on South America as revenge for my brother's death by the Nazis.
Which makes sense because most of the, you know, the escape to South America. There you go.
I'm going to go one farther and say, to go with the Jurassic Park theme, he's a clone of Roger. And the boys from Brazil, they were trying to clone Hitler, so it all ties together.
That's
so
right. And instead of cloning Hitler, they cloned Roger.
Oh, yeah. Like, switch. It's like a abnormal.
Yeah.
They
got the wrong test tube.
Or,
which makes those Nazi dinosaurs, which is even worse. So.
Okay.
Yes.
Anything else you want to say about that,
Sparrow? No, that's about it.
Anything about Steve McQueen?
You know, I'm not really as familiar with it. I can only, this might be the only Steve McQueen movie. Oh, no, I saw Bullet. He's in Bullet, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
He is the titular Bullet. And I saw the Bullet. Those are the only three Steve McQueen movies I've seen. So
you've never seen The Magnificent Seven?
I've never seen The Magnificent Seven. I've never seen The Getaway.
Okay. Tom just said the Thomas Crown Affair. Wow. Exactly. It's fine. I'm not a fan of the Thomas Crown Affair, either version of it. Towering Inferno?
Oh, I think I might have seen when I was a small child.
Okay.
So, there you go.
And that one also has O.J. Simpson in it, so, you know, lots of fun. O.J. Simpson gets to burn alive.
I learned something funny about The Towering Inferno, which is that it was based on two different books. Have you heard this?
Yes.
It's crazy. The one was called The Tower and one was called The Inferno, and they're like, let's just put your chocolate in my peanut butter and make The Towering Inferno. But anyway, we're getting far afield from the greatest.
We don't care. We'll go back. We'll go back. It's always fun going off on tangents. At least I think so. Tom agrees.
Yeah.
But no, that actually, you can go even a step further with if The Towering Inferno is based on two different books. So one book stars Steve McQueen and one book stars Paul Newman. And that's the reason why they had so much trouble on the set, the two of them together, where they were fighting over, you know, which one gets more lines, mm-hmm. and which one gets more screen time. And, all right, there you go. You see? Huh. All right. Now we can get back to The Great Escape. Sorry.
Great Escape.
Hey, what's that?
So we cut to the inside of Colin and Henley's room, and we see him playing chess, smoking, drinking tea, and Werner comes in like a madman and is startled by Colin being in the room, which I'm a little surprised by the scene in that, I mean, Henley says he's a friend and Colin is good, but I'm a little surprised Werner doesn't make any more of an effort to kick Colin out.
Well, why would he? I mean, we've already discussed the fact the guards are not the cream of the crop here. Okay, they're not the smartest. I mean, being you know, if you've been placed in Zagin, being a ferret, as we've discussed in the past, is to actually try to find escape attempts and you know, look for things that are out of the ordinary. Okay, to give that job to someone like this who easily gets his wallet pickpocketed, and we don't know exactly how much time has gone since the previous since he lost his wallet, but my assumption is it's not just 5 minutes ago. This has been a few days.
Right.
So it makes you wonder. I guess his leave came up and he wanted to go, you know, he was getting ready to leave and go to the train, and he says, "Oh crap. where's my wallet?"
Yeah, not the smartest tool in the crayon box.
Exactly.
I think it's funny that he clearly still doesn't trust him. He still clearly doesn't trust Donald Pleasance's character. I mean, you know, he looks at him. He's like, "Oh no, don't worry about it. He's friendly." And then he goes and he steps like another foot. Like, he can't hear us if we're this far away. he moves like a foot and a half farther over, as if that's going to provide them with some kind of level of protection.
But, well, we're whispering. We're whispering.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no microphones in the room.
What I thought was interesting about him moving is he's moving right in view of the window. Mm. And when he was in the room earlier, he made a huge deal about how he wasn't supposed to be in the room and he'd get in trouble. And now with he in a pickle, he's moving in direct view of the window, which, yeah, we've already established he's not super smart. But
okay, it is nighttime now as opposed to being daytime. The last time it was during daytime, so it was probably easier to feel that he was going to be seen at that point. But you're right. I mean, there's no logic to the way that he does that. But, you know, the whole scene itself is done in a very strange way. I mean, first of all, did either of you notice that when Henley says check to Colin, Colin is startled and nearly spills his tea?
Yes.
No, I did not notice that.
Well, he kind of slams
it. It's as if he wasn't expecting it, you know, based on, you know, maybe in the past, Colin actually was the chess master. And in this particular case, you know, he just doesn't understand how Henley, you know, was able to outwit him so quickly. And obviously, he's you see that he's not that nervous because he's making his tea. I mean, he's got his little condensed milk there. So you know that's continuation from – that was the first thing I looked for when I saw he was drinking tea. Because, you know, as he said a while ago or weeks ago from our standpoint, you know, that drinking tea without milk is uncivilized. So, you know, he's now always made sure that he has his condensed milk. But he seems quite confident that he's pouring the tea and he's, you know, using the thing. And he just, like, dropped the whole thing as soon as he says check. And – you know, Henley is someone we can tell is overconfident about everything because, you know, he's a scrounger. That's his job to be. He's the con artist here. And when Werner walks into the room, I love how, you know, he calls Henley her Henley, which, you know, you'd think that, okay, he's the guard. He's the one who should be in the power the power position here. But instead, he's referring to him as Mister. He's not a prisoner. He's this. He's referring to him, I guess you can somewhat say, either in an equal position between the two of them, or you can even say that he's, you know, because, like, for instance, if you go somewhere, you're going to refer to someone as Mister out of respect or out of fear. You know, I know when I was a kid, you know, unlike today where all kids call their friends' parents by their first names. When I was a kid, you know, you refer to your friend's parents as Mr. and Mrs. You know, there was no, you know, there's no informality there. It was very formal, and it had, I guess, to do with fear, and it also had to do with respect, combination of both. Today, don't have either of those. I always find it funny when my kids friends call me by my first name. And I'm like, you know, on the one hand, I don't want to feel old by having them tag on the title of Mr. But, you know, there is the you know, you I'm not their friend. I want to be seen in somewhat of a respectful way.
They should at least treat you with the same respect as a Nazi guard.
That's no, but I'm saying the Nazi guard is treating them with respect. It's treating the prisoner. Okay. It's the opposite.
Got it. Yeah,
It's not that Henley is treating the guard with respect. Henley's actually making fun of him the whole time.
But I mean, Henley's got Werner by the short hairs here, and Werner knows it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knows that if it's not here, I'm screwed. Or even if Henley, you know, brings it to Von Luger's office and says, here, I found this in the yard, that's not going to end well for Werner either.
No, not at all. But again, he can't go much further down from here besides to the Russian front. You know,
that's a pretty big step.
That's the only direction he's going. He's going east. That's it. But no, it's just that what the way that we've discussed this in the past, Alex, you haven't heard this yet, but in the book because this is obviously based on a true story, there were a lot of times where the prisoners were able to steal things from visiting electricians and visiting, and they just didn't report it because they were too scared that they would get in trouble. You know, for that. But in this case, you know, he needs his wallet. I mean, he states that he has, you know, in his wallet, he has his papers, his identity card. You know, basically, he's screwed without it. There's, you know, he can't do anything without that. So the same prisoners need all of those documents in order to be able to get around Germany the same, you know, with as much ease.
If only he knew someone who could fake documents like that.
Exactly. If only he would actually pay attention to what's going on. Look on the other side of the blackboard. You know, you know, there's not just a bird on the blackboard. There's,
No, I was going to say another observation about when he takes him aside and he explains about how he lost his wallet and stuff. And meanwhile, Donald Pleasance is still over the chessboard. And then once they say, hey, Donald Pleasance, and he looks up like startled, like he wasn't listening to what they were saying. Was he really not listening to what they were saying? Or is he really like, was he faking it to try to put the guard at ease? Or was he really not listening to what they were saying?
Oh, he's
really wrapped up in the chess game.
He's listening.
I think he's wrapped up in the chicken. You can see he's intensely looking at the board, trying to figure out how he got into this position and how he's going to get out of it. He might be, you know, maybe he's able to multitask. I mean, obviously the internet back then, you know, where all of us have learned to be able to multitask at the same time. But maybe this chessboard was his internet, where he could look at the chessboard and at the same time pay attention to this conversation. I mean, I love the way that Henley just, you know, he says everything in a comical, he's somewhat sympathetic in a comical way. You know, he like turns to Blythe and he basically says, he lost his wallet. Do you know what would happen if Strachlitz found out? Meaning, you know, we can understand the tone because obviously it's meant that way. And obviously because they're speaking in English, the German guard, the way he understands English, possibly he won't necessarily understand that he's made fun of at this point.
It seems so obvious to someone's tone that that they're teasing him.
Because we're native English speakers. You know, here you have someone who's a guard who again is not the cream of the crop. Yeah. Okay, so he knows a little bit of English. He was in the Boy Scouts, as we know. I guess at some point he's, you know, he, I mean, the whole movie does this, you know, they'll be talking down to the Germans. You have it also in Hogan's Heroes. You have it in these, you know, any of the comedies that, or the comic moments dealing with Nazis in camps. They also do that even in The Bridge on the River Kwai. There are points where, you know, they're making fun of the guards who don't understand that they're being made fun of. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's all just the head of this story, you know, that they throw in all this comical aspects throughout the entire movie. Mm-hmm.
So the reason I think that Colin's listening to the conversation is he's getting a timeline for when do I need to have the first copies of all of these forgeries done. Because Burner needs his wallet back, which means he needs all the paperwork back, so Colin doesn't have access to them anymore. So he's got to have something done and ready to go. So he's going, okay, it just in his head, he's going, all right, I've got the ID card done. I've got the train ticket done. I don't have whatever finished. Yeah, I need to get that done tonight. That's the last thing. That's got to get done so I can get the wallet back to Henley, who can get it back to Werner. And so that's what he's processing while listening to the conversation.
That's interesting. But again, as we stated before, we don't know how much time has passed. But the assumption is that enough time has passed that he's already made multiple copies of all of those documents, because they know they have to work fast. As soon as they got the documents, they're aware that time is of the essence. They don't know when they're going to, you know, how long they're going to have it to work on. They're not going to sit around on it for a few weeks, especially since they have a whole team. They need to make, 250, they need to make documents for 200 forgers. So they have a large team of forgers. It's not as if Colin's doing it all on his own. He's definitely, in charge. He's the one who makes sure that they all do it right. But my assumption is that at this point he's not even worried about that. I think he's thinking to himself, he's saying, I hope Henley remembers that we need a camera. Maybe that's what's going through his mind, with the right type of shutter.
Is there any significance to do you think I feel like if this was like a Stanley Kubrick film, the pieces would be in a certain specific order on the chessboard. That would be some indication of something. You think that's the case here?
Or is no.
it's just pieces put on there.
I think it's just random.
Do you think it's a real chess game? Like, was it once really set up like a chessboard, and then maybe the actors were sitting around bored waiting for a shot to set up? Or is it just...
Looking at the board, there is nothing that jumps out to me as being inherently illegal about it.
Uh-huh.
But like I said before, I am not a chess expert in any way.
Shepard. Yeah.
Apparently neither is Colin.
I mean, he could be an expert if Henley's just a grandmaster. There's only so much you can
right.
do.
Yeah.
That's true. It's very true.
I remember I taught my brother to play chess, and he very quickly learned to beat me repeatedly and consistently. And it's been quite an adjustment to my ego to realize that my younger brother is actually much better at games than I am. So I know whenever
did he make you an offer you couldn't refuse?
it's the wrong show, but yeah. I know when I play him in games, I have like a couple of games before the learning curve kicks in, and then he'll start to beat me. So I always enjoy teaching him a new game, and then
sounds like reasons to buy more games for you, Alex. So every time you have a different one to teach him, you beat him a couple of times, and the next time you move on to the next
exactly.
one.
Yeah, exactly. Get bored with it, move on to another one.
Or just stop playing with your brother.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Find someone to beat.
That's the sole criteria. Well, you all want to play with someone a little bit better than you to sharpen your skills, but... Anywho,
that's true. No, I prefer to play games with people who are on level playing fields. So this way, there's give and take. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Yeah. You don't lose every time, and you don't win every time.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's one of the problems I have playing games with my kids. I want to teach them, good sportsmanship and stuff like that. So sometimes I have to let them win, and it bothers me a little bit. But the smile on their face when they actually think they beat me is good enough.
Do they ever legitimately beat you?
Yes, it has happened. Again, they've gotten older, so there are games that they now can beat, and that's fine.
Take on their old man.
Yeah, but again, it's the idea that sometimes they win and sometimes I win. It's not I can't say that there's any games that I play with my kids or that I stop playing with my kids because they constantly beat me.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, did you have anything else for this minute?
No, I think I've got everything on my notes for this one.
Alex, you have anything for this minute or anything for the movie as a whole you want to get off your chest?
Well, I was while I was doing my little bit of research, I discovered that there is a Great Escape 2. Have you guys
yes.
seen this?
Yes,
I have seen parts of it.
Okay. I'm fascinated by unknown sequels to very famous movies like Return to Oz or My Summer Story, which is the sequel to Christmas Story. And so and also the fact that it was made 25 years later or whatever.
Nearly 30 years later, actually.
Yeah.
And it was directed by one of the actors in the movie.
Oh, and the actors in The Great Escape or one of the actors in The Great Escape?
No, the actors in The Great Escape.
Oh, okay. Must have added some legitimacy.
A little bit. First of all, no, it came out in 88. You're right, it was 25 years later that it was directed by Judd Taylor, who plays Goff in this movie, who's the third American. You know, you have Steve McQueen, you have James Gardner, and you have Judd Taylor.
He's the other guy.
He's the other guy. He's the guy who holds on to the mitt. You know,
he's one of these three is not like the others.
Exactly. So this was a Great Escape 2 was a made for TV movie that basically tells a similar story. It tells the same story. It's not like a different escape. It's the same escape, but it is much more true to the real story, and it stars Christopher Judd Hirsch. Playing investigators trying to figure out, you know, what happened. I haven't seen it in years. I probably should rewatch it at some point, especially seeing this, and then I could be a little more intelligent about what actually happened in the sequel. But I remember it wasn't that great. It's actually even longer than this movie.
Wow. You know,
this movie's 2 hours and 52 minutes. That one's 2 hours and 58 minutes.
Oh, they had to make it just slightly more just to one up them.
Yeah, I mean, Ian McShane plays Roger.
Yeah. Well, I love Ian McShane.
Yeah, so, and Donald Pleasance is also in it.
I was going to say, yeah.
What do you know? But he plays, I think, one Germans.
Oh, another clone, another layer to the cloning story.
Exactly. We seem to have gotten a theme here.
Attack of the Clones.
That's right.
I don't know, also, my last question for you guys, it seems like everyone has like a nickname, like, you know, the Fixer or the Forger and all that stuff. Have you guys already discussed what your nicknames would be?
No.
Or do you already have nicknames?
Oh, that's actually a good question. I know what my superpower and specialty is, and that's watching movies. The Watcher, exactly, you know. Tom's the professor.
I don't know about that.
You make anything out of coconuts and bamboo.
Well, no, we already did the cat. We already did the members of the Great Escape. So I don't get to be the professor. We've already established.
No, I wasn't referring to the professor in Gilligan's Island. I was referring to the fact that you're going to be going soon for your doctorate. So, you know, that's why I said it. It wasn't meant as a jab. What would yours be, Alex?
I have no superpowers that would be useful in an environment like this. So I'd probably play the ballast or the, like, you know, just like the, I'm a red shirt basically to mix universes here.
You could draw the map.
Okay, you stand in front of me while I'm doing something important. You block. That's what I'd be. I'd be the blocker. I'd be
and unfortunately. Unfortunately, people can't see that we see that you're wearing a red shirt today.
I literally am wearing a red shirt. That's weird. Oh my gosh. I hope it's not a bad omen for the rest of the day.
Just don't stand in the way of people digging tunnels. You'll be fine.
Okay. I won't go on any missions with anyone more famous than I am. That way, that's ensured that I will stay alive.
There you go. Or just go on your own. Actually, that doesn't help either.
Yeah.
Red shirts. Oh, well, he just didn't come back. Change that shirt quickly.
Yep.
Well, Alex, was there anything else?
Nope. That's it made me want to revisit this movie. I have not seen it for a long, long time. So I want to watch it and then Great Escape 2.
What's your history with the movie?
Do
you remember how old you were when you saw it? And
I was probably in my early 20s, which is now very long ago. My parents are both huge. They love World War II types of movies, and my mom has thousands of video cassettes of movies she's taped off the actually, a slightly amusing story. She lent me the videotape, and it was like the last, like, 3 minutes get cut off.
Oh, jeez.
But I'm like, nah, nothing important must happen in those last 3 minutes. So I eventually had to track it down. Like, I had to go rent it just so I could just watch the last bit of the film. And
That's hilarious. I mean, I guess it's too bad that they didn't have a longer credit, sequence. That would have helped you. I mean, 2 minutes, the last 2 minutes are credits. So you only missed a minute worth of the movie. So I hope it was worth the $5 going to Blockbuster to get the.
It totally was. Those gaffers are undercredited. They deserve more recognition, I feel.
Oh, wow, that's great. I mean, it's funny how many of our guests are familiar with this movie, including Tom and I, based on the fact that our parents, loved watching World War II movies.
Yeah, it's easy.
That got us into it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and, I mean, also, this was, at least for me, and you both are a little bit older than me, this was on Turner Classic Movies at probably once a month, and it was just, there was those handful of movies that was always on TCM that you just end up seeing them through osmosis because TCM doesn't have commercials. I can sit here and watch this for a while. Good. So I don't know if Turner Classic Movies has commercials now or not, but it's been a while.
I don't think they do.
I don't think so, but I don't know.
It's also, I mean, nowadays with streaming and everything, you're more likely to watch it on the Turner Classic Movie, through HBO Max or something than you are actually on the channel. At least I am.
Yeah, me too. I can't remember the last time I watched something with commercials. What are commercials? They're just the annoying thing that stops in the middle of the stops you in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
As I say, the only thing I watch on regular television anymore is sports. So
I'm really surprised TV hasn't gone with pop-up things instead of actually stopping the film. You can now sit through some commercials. I'm surprised they just don't have. I mean, I guess on some shows they do, but I'm surprised all commercials aren't like that now. Just keep the show going, and you're more likely to get people to continue watching through commercials if it's part of the. Anyway, I want to get this.
No, but I know I the truth is I think that financially it's not worth their while because when they make a TV show that's 22 minutes or 43 minutes, depending on how long, whether it's a half hour or an hour show. They'd have to spend more money to actually write a show or a 60-minute show. Because then it would just be really strange that, you'd only be watching somebody for 44 minutes.
That's true.
You have the schedule, okay, well, this TV show is on from 9 till 9:44.
Right, so. Yeah. But, well, like you said, though, who sits through commercials these days? So
that's right. That's right. You just put up a pop-up marker and that's it. Someone will create a pop-up. If someone goes for your idea, someone will create a pop-up for you.
Well, Alex, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It was a pleasure having you.
Oh, it was fun. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yes.
If they don't know.
If they somehow don't know where you are.
I am the co-host of a Star Wars Minute, which is like what you guys are doing, but we do it for Star Wars.
What's that? I've never heard of it.
Star Wars, it's first of all, it was a period of Civil War. And so if you want to hear that, you can find that wherever you find podcasts or go to StarWarsMinute.com and check that out, if you will.
It's worth it. Even when they're doing The Last Jedi, it's worth it.
Oh, haters gonna hate.
We're gonna get
no. I'm not a hater. I'm a Star Wars fan through and through. I just don't like it as much as the others. That's the difference.
Well, yeah, I can't. We all have our. I'm not looking forward to doing The Rise of Skywalker. I'll say that just because that is my least favorite Star Wars thing. Ever, I think so. But anyway,
more than the holiday special.
I think the holiday special is. It's.
I know you guys have fun talking about it, but that's the
Well, the holiday special knows what it is. It knows it's a piece of junk aimed at TV, aimed for TV, and But The Rise of Skywalker has pretensions of being the finale of the Star Wars saga, which is That's why it's worse than the holiday.
But is it worse than Attack of the Clones?
We'll wait 2 years to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. If I make it through there.
Yes. Well, while you're subscribing to Star Wars Minute, go ahead and subscribe to our podcast and give us a 5-star review on whatever you use. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at thegreatminute@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at greatescapemxm and join our Facebook group, The Cooler, or you can just go ahead and check out our website, thegreatminute.com. Until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.